Welcome back, baseball fans, to episode 72 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I am your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the baron of all baseball podcasts. The Nats GM Show is sponsored by No Halftime and the No Halftime app. What is that, you may ask? Well, let me fill you in. You're staring at your weekly fantasy opponent and thinking to yourself, I would love to challenge just one of his players, not his entire team. But your fantasy sports service doesn't allow you to. Now you can on the all-new No Halftime app. The No Halftime app allows you to create individual challenges using players or teams. For example, you can pit Bryce Harper versus Mike Trout, Miguel Cabrera versus Manny Machado, or Chris Davis versus Matt Kemp. Creating a challenge takes seconds, and accepting a challenge is even easier. No Halftime challenges can be private or public and created for the MLB, NFL, NBA, NHL, PGA, and other sports. Join today and get started. Real money and fantasy supremacy awaits you. And now you can also try No Halftime for free with $0 challenges. Visit NoHalftime.com for more information and to download the No Halftime app for your iPhone or Android device. Receive a bonus by entering in the promo code NATSGM at signup. Receive a free t-shirt when you make a deposit. No Halftime, where the fantasy sports season never takes a break.
This is Matt from MattsBats.com, and you're listening to the Nats GM Show.
And now, I am proud to welcome our guest this week, writer at Baseball Prospectus and one of my favorite prospect evaluators in the Mid-Atlantic area, Adam McInturf. Adam, welcome to the Nats GM Show.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
And I wanted to make sure I got the name right.
McInturf, yeah, you hit the nail on the head.
All right, very, very cool. Well, first and foremost, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I've been extremely impressed with the work you've done in the last several months at Baseball Prospectus.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
And you've done a great job of covering the local area particularly. I know you're a Nationals fan, so I'm really excited to have you on and talk a whole bunch of Nats prospects and some prospects today.
Yeah, no, it'll be a good time. I'm ready to get rolling.
All right, let's dive in. First place I want to start, Lucas Giolito. I think we've all talked about him, but I think what an opportune time now that he had his first start kind of the last couple days, depending on when everybody's listening to this. But as we kind of, I think we were writing to each other, it probably worked out the best it could have worked out for him in his first start. He had four innings and then the rain got in, but you kind of saw the good in Giolito, you saw the bad. Kind of your thoughts on the start, and then let's talk a little Giolito.
Yeah, for sure. Well, he's, a good starting point because he's, you know, as exciting as probably anybody that we could talk about at all in the minor leagues, and certainly the most exciting Nationals prospects, pitching prospects since Steven Strasburg. You said that you saw the good and the bad. I think that actually the reason that it went so well that he got out of the game with the rain delay is because we really didn't see the bad. I think it was a perfect opportunity for Lucas to go out there, kind of get some confidence, get some outs to the big league level on the big league stage. Obviously, it was a home game with a lot of fanfare. But some of the concerns, it's important to mention first that, you know, any negatives that we mentioned with a guy like Giolito are, in the grand scheme of things, pretty nitpicky. I mean, this is a top-flight major league pitching prospect and a guy that has every chance to pitch the front end of a rotation with, enough durability, despite the Tommy John surgery as an amateur, to give you innings, and, you know, with the stuff to really miss bats and be a very impactful contributor. You know, if there's been anything when I've seen him in Harrisburg this year, which is, you know, I'd see a lot of Eastern League baseball, there's no denying the frame. There's no denying the power of the stuff. There's no denying the fact that it's just, you know, effortless plus pitches across the board. I think that in his delivery, I wouldn't call it stiff. I think there is a little bit of something in the back in the takeaway when his arm's coming out of his glove. That right now, it might keep from fastball command standpoint, it might keep his fastball up in the zone a little bit, albeit a terrific fastball that'll get up to the upper 90s. I think if I had any concern watching Lucas this spring and then kind of projecting him forward to a big league game, I was worried about if he were to face that Mets lineup two or three times over, if the fastball command would have caught more barrels the second and third time through. And he really relied on his fastball the first time to the lineup. He threw it about 80% of the time. Certainly consistently was getting to a hammer breaking ball. But we'll see. I think he might be up for a while, for a couple of starts. But if there's one thing I think that will be the development point for him, it's just going to be working on fine-tuning that fastball command. And aside from that, we really saw a guy that can get big league hitters out and out with swings and misses right now. He's a really big kid. He's really large. Like, you know, we talk about a lot of pitching prospects, you know, even high-octane pitching prospects across the minor leagues. And these guys generally are still falling in that, you know, physical, but 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", you know, maybe leaner type. For Nationals fans listening to this podcast, I think Joe Ross is kind of an example of a traditional frame for a pitching prospect. And Lucas is huge. He's a lot bigger than that. He's 6'6", or 6'7", you know, I don't know what he's listed at, 240, 250. And I think just some of that huge size, I mean, I think that's kind of where he gets some of the natural power to his pitches too, and certainly terrific angle. But I think that, you know, it makes his operation through the delivery maybe a little bit less fluid than if we're talking about a little bit shorter and maybe just more of a leaner frame guy. I think Lucas Giolito, to me, body comparison-wise, certainly I'm not, and hopefully not, comparing to the way that injuries were a real detractor in Josh Johnson's career, but from a frame standpoint, I think Giolito is a lot more like Josh Johnson, and that is a pretty big guy.
Yeah, so I think that's a good call.
That some of that stiffness is just a byproduct of just how, you know, how darn big this kid really is.
Yeah. Okay, talk to me a little bit about Trey Turner and your thoughts. I thought it certainly caught Nationals fans' eye this week, or whatever body part we'll use. When he played a couple games in center field, I liked him as a possible center fielder out of college, but it seems like he'd made the proper steps to be a shortstop. Talk to me a little bit your thoughts on Trey Turner.
No, definitely. You know, I mean, it's been a great year for the Nationals farm system overall. When we're talking about Lucas Giolito's debuting, Turner's played so well at AAA. Obviously, there are some other guys that have taken steps forward. I'm sure we'll get to in a moment, like Robles and Stevenson. You know, Turner's been a big part of the steps forward, I think, at the minor league level Washington's taken in 2016. You know, I think coming out of college, I might have had the same skepticism that you mentioned about Turner remaining at shortstop. I mean, clearly he's anyone that's familiar with him, he's a terrific runner. I think his most explosive tool is the speed. So at shortstop, he shortens a lot of throws with his legs, and he has terrific range. But, you know, I haven't seen him a ton this year. You know, I saw him in Texas last year a lot in the Texas League when he was still with San Diego playing for the San Antonio Missions. You know, I think it's probably closer to a five arm, and sometimes the hands didn't work great for me at shortstop. You know, but certainly I think with the range and the speed, he might have a chance to stay there. I kind of wonder, clearly I think with his speed and athleticism, he could translate to center field. I wonder if he was in center field the other night. Clearly that caught my eyes too. You know, as they kind of, maybe the Nationals are getting ready to insert him into the fold in some way, in some usage, you know, get utility out of a player with the dynamic speed and maybe positional versatility of a Trey Turner for the second half stretch run. So I kind of wonder, you know, obviously I think that you probably actually watch more big league Nationals games than I do, but with Revere, I know we kind of had some road bumps early on coming back from the DL. I know the season got off to a late start. But, you know, I wonder whether it's some kind of super utility role for Trey, whether it's him pinch running later in games and maybe saving both Espinosa or Revere moving between center field and shortstop every now and again. So that's, I have no idea. That hasn't been confirmed with anybody or anything. that was just the first thing that crossed my mind when I saw Trey Turner in center field the other night.
Yeah, I also don't think I think there's also the side benefit of perhaps it lighting a little bit of a fire, certainly under Revere as well, who's been still struggling even after, you know, now getting, shoot, almost 2 months worth of at-bats now.
Yeah, no, it's true. And it's funny, I think the games where, and I think some of the way that we've seen the Nationals offense start to produce through late May and through June, the times where they're really clicking are the times where they're either getting the lineup is lengthened because they have guys like Espinosa, you know, hitting a little bit more at the bottom of the lineup, or sometimes up at the top. I know in the last couple of weeks, Michael Taylor had a better stretch probably than he's had for a while in 2016 up top. And when Revere is on base, having more dynamic speed and versatility in terms of the type of hitter at the top of the lineup too, I think the Nationals offense has been really behooved this year. So Trey Turner definitely falls into that type of category, that type of offensive tool set. And certainly, you look at the stats, there's just not much left for him to prove at AAA. So maybe, he would be able to help the offense in those respects, either the top or the bottom of the lineup, providing contact and speed for a team that leads the National League in home runs right now.
Yeah. Let me ask you about two more infield prospects. I want to talk Wilmer Defoe, who certainly has been struggling a little bit, and conversely, Drew Ward, who's having a bit of a breakout, maybe too strong of a season, but certainly a great start and great first half. Kind of your thoughts on both Defoe and Drew Ward?
Yeah, well, it's good. I'm glad, just from what I know, that he has had some bumps in Harrisburg, but I'm glad that a couple of years later we're still talking about Wilmer Defoe. I think people that are deep followers of the national system will remember that he kind of broke out as an older player that was the rock of the lineup for a very good GCL Nationals team a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Defoe's been a winning player. He's been on some very good teams. He was on good teams, I think, in Hagerstown, maybe Potomac as well. I think how old is he now? He's 24?
Yeah, I think he 25? Is. Yeah, he might be 25.
He's a little older.
Yeah.
He's a little older. I think that some of the bumps in the road that we're seeing at the AA level might just be, limitations of his offensive contribution being exposed at a more advanced level. But, I think that he's very much in the mold of a Nationals type of player. And I think that we're going to get to talk about a couple more of these types of high fundamental, positionally versatile grinder types of players throughout the system. I think, like I said, we'll probably touch on some Max Schrocks and otherwise. But I think that he might kind of fit that profile if we're looking at a guy that they get any utility out of at the big league level, during team-controlled years. I think that Defoe is a guy that kind of fits that utility infield profile, and certainly the high marks that he gets for his attitude and makeup and enthusiasm only would help that role and help his contribution in the clubhouse. Drew Ward, another guy you talked about, really good to see him start getting to power in games the way that scouts have long talked about his left-handed frame and raw power having the potential to do. He's shown a lot more power this year. I've got a chance to see him a lot. I see the Carolina League for us. Potomac, obviously, pretty close to my home in Northern Virginia. And, there is a lot to like with Ward. I think the raw ingredients are there in terms of the frame, left-handed power for a corner guy. Although I have to say, I hope he proves me wrong. Like you said, big Nats fan, I think Drew Ward also has been a very high makeup, high energy guy. It's something that I noticed when I saw him in Hagerstown a few years ago. But he has some struggles, I think. I think there's going to be more swing. I think he's hitting for pretty high batting averages right now. And I'm not sure if he's really going to be a hit tool guy. I don't even know if he's really going to be like a 260 hitter, really, if you were to give him every day at bats. I've seen some issues with some swing and miss and pitch ID, especially against same side pitching, when mm-hmm. he's facing left-handed guys. I've seen situations where, you don't see too many guys in high A get shifted against. You don't see too many guys in high A get matched up against late in games. But he's the type of guy, he's been hitting in the 3 or 4 hole with Marmolejos all year. in Potomac. And I think, you know, when you're a Carolina League manager trying to win games at that level, he's the guy this year, the way he's producing the middle of the Potomac lineup. You don't want Drew Ward to beat you. And teams are finding ways in high leverage situations to get him out. And this is a high A.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, so I like the frame. I like the profile in terms of the raw ingredients. I'm not even really sure if he's going to stick at third. In fact, I think I'm fairly confident, both when you look at the Nationals, like, infield mix. Like, if, let's like, take Rendon out of the equation. But, like, even if we were to do that, I don't really know. He's a bigger guy, thicker lower half. His arm's all right. I really don't think, though, he's lateral enough to stay at third. And I kind of worry that, you know, I know Marrero hits on the other side of the plate, but I think a realistic middle ground for Drew Ward could be kind of a 4A or a bench bat or a platoon type of guy, might move over to first base. And, you know, we had the Nationals have had a similarly highly drafted corner guy from a few years back kind of fit that mold in Chris Marrero, like I mentioned. So that's kind of been
Matt
the profile Scholes that I've always thought.
Yeah.
So I, you know, you want that left-handed power to switch. Obviously, he's having a very good year in high A, and it's, you know, going to put him, I think, more on the national map. Probably would fall out of top 100 prospect consideration to me right now in baseball, but certainly a guy, you know, with power and a big league frame from the left-hand side taking a step forward in 2016.
Yeah, for me, he's a nice trade chip here in the next month, frankly, but that's just a side note. So
yeah, no, I think that's going to be something interesting we can touch on later in terms of some of the guys in this system that have taken steps forward this year that might give give the front office a little bit more mobility in terms of dealing from a surplus of prospects than they may have had in the last year or two at the deadline.
And we got to circle back to that point because I really, really want to talk to you about that. But let's before we do that, let's go to the outfield. It wouldn't be a prospect conversation with the Nationals if we didn't talk about Victor Robles, obviously.
Yeah, it would not. Yep.
I got to get your take on him. And then I also want to get your thoughts on Andrew Stevenson and Rafi Bautista, kind of two similar but, you know, kind of different players as well.
Yeah. I'll start clearly, I think, with Robles, who is the guy – you know, I think to a man, if you were to talk to anybody in TD with Washington, that they would be the most excited about of the group you just mentioned. That's no knock on Rafi or Stevenson. I think both those guys have definitely opened eyes and played their games as well. But, you know, Bautista, there's a lot of unique things about him. He's 18, 19, just turned 19. 19, just he, after a stellar first half in the South Atlantic League for Hagerstown, where he was an all-star, he was bumped up. He's going to be playing very close to any local listeners now at Potomac. You know, he's definitely has the defensive tools and the speed to stay in center field. And there's very advanced both offensive tools that he has, but also offensive skills. He's impressed people playing against older competition basically from the get-go since he debuted in the GCL in 2014 with a very advanced ability to get the bat to the ball and kind of a knowledge of how to spray the gaps, how to use both fields, and how to get kind of a hybrid combination with some power in his bat, but also how to use the speed. It's a very balanced swing. It's a very loose, quick swing. And I think that as he continues to get older, learns how to turn on the ball, and just kind of grows into his man strength a little bit more. I mean, we are looking at, you know, a guy that I think has a chance to be an everyday center fielder and at least average, if not, I really think, more when you consider his hitting tools and also the speed. I think he can certainly crack 260 batting averages. He can contribute on the bases, and there's going to be some power. I mean, I don't know if this is a 2020 center fielder. Maybe it is. I think in the best case, maybe it is. But I also don't think, you know, this is a slap and dash table setter center fielder either. This is going to be a guy that's going to get a double digit home runs, bat flips the way people think it will. And he's going to, you know, I think be at least a 20 steals guy. I mean, he's got a chance to be a solid regular, if not a little bit more. And, you know, he's as exciting a positional prospect in Washington system as I can remember. I don't know about you. You know, I know Rendon was very, very exciting too, but it was a little bit of a different profile.
Very different.
Very highly regarded, college guy. Yeah, I mean, I think you might make the argument. You know, Victor Robles is, we're internally at Baseball Prospectus, we're soon to release our mid-season top 50 prospects, and that's a really good, I think, current look of the way the industry reflects some of the best prospects in the minors through the first half of this season. And Robles, he was our number 27 prospect in our top 101 before the season anyway, and he's almost certainly going to move way up on that list. And I think that just reflects the degree that he's a outfield prospect, the likes of which Washington might not have had in a long time. So hopefully, you know, this guy that we're describing is going to be who he is, and he's a building block for the Nationals moving forward.
Yeah, I comp him with what B.J. Upton was supposed to be.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, no, it's a very good comp.
Although comps are the worst thing ever, but yeah, so.
No, it's a good comp, and I mean, I know that B.J. Upton even is looked at with some disappointment, but the reality is, like, that's a guy that really, at the end of the day, we're going to look back, and B.J. Upton's going to have had a very good major league career. So, but, you know, in terms of the consistency of the hit tool, though, I think maybe you look at Upton, Upton might have a little bit more power, but I think Robles, at the same age, certainly looks like he checks the boxes of a guy that's going to have a more reliable hit tool than Upton ever did.
Yeah. Now let's talk Stevenson and Bautista, two guys who are very different center fielder types, but know their games and are pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, no, very much so. Stevenson, I'll start with him. I think that start the year, I don't know what you heard. I think that the organization internally was higher on Andrew Stevenson than maybe the consensus was.
1,000%. 1,000%.
And I'll be the first one to say, really, I don't want to be the type of guy that was like lukewarm on a guy, and then he has a good first half, and I said I was in. I was one of the ones initially that might have had some reservations, not about Stevenson's kind of what I call supplementary tools in terms of speed, defense, kind of his defensive profile, but I did wonder, even if this guy, he's a burner and a great defensive center fielder, and he's surefire to stay in center field. But all that said, I did wonder if the bat was really enough for like a, you know, like a regular everyday center fielder for a contending team. But he's done everything that he can do. And like I said, I see Potomac a lot. I've seen a lot of Andrew Stevenson this year. He's done everything he can do to, I think, show people outside of the organization that, you know what, like this is kind of a table setting type of profile. This is not going to be a, you know, we just talked about maybe the 2020 center fielder that Robles might be. This is not going to be one of those guys. But by the same token, this is a guy that has game-changing speed, terrific defense, and knows his offensive strengths. And he's going to do his best to try and get on base and set the table and create some havoc. And he did a really good job of that in the first half of the Carolina. He was the MVP of the Carolina-California All-Star game. Last week, our own Wilson Kerman covered that. And I think he just got called up to Harrisburg, didn't he?
He did, yes, this week.
Yeah. Yeah, so it'll be fun. Definitely will be fun to see Andrew Stevenson and Rafael Bautista, who didn't touch on Nets, playing the same outfield. Rafael Bautista, I think he might be getting overshadowed a little bit now because we've had the resurgence of Robles and we had Stevenson added to the system. So that's you know, two outfielders that I think might take some shine away from a third guy, and I think Bautista probably was that guy before both of those guys kind of got to their point in terms of the consensus opinion on where they're at right now. Bautista, I've seen him in Harrisburg. I think to me, at the end of the day, if the Nationals, especially in their contending state right now, if you kind of just objectively look at where they are as an organization on the major league win curve, I think Bautista probably fits best as a fourth outfielder or a bench piece, and I think that might be the ceiling for him. But I can see him as the type of guy that gets every day at bats for a lesser club. And again, you know, like with all these guys, I think the Nationals do a really, really good job finding players that really play the game well and fundamentally. And I think that you can see when you spend a lot of time around their affiliates, which I do in Harrisburg and Potomac and Hagerstown, makeup is really important. And I think all these guys that we're touching on, they play the game hard, they play the game with a fire, and they have some bounce in their step and a smile on their face. And I think cheesy as that sounds, I think that Rafael Batista really falls into that category. So hopefully he can be a guy maybe with some bench versatility the big league club can get some usage out of moving forward.
I really like Bautista's – I hate the term baseball IQ necessarily, but he understands who he is. He's not going to hit the ball out of the park, but he can put the bat on the ball and use his speed and get on base, and he plays a heck of a defensive center field. I mean, I really like guys who understand what their profile is and maximize that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I think that, you know, whether it's Victor Robles, who has huge – you know, he has big tools, but he also kind of has – I kind of call that playability. I don't really know, again, whether it's baseball IQ or feel for the game or gets the most out of what he's got. You hear a lot of different phrases that are trying to get to the same end, but I think there's a lot of playability with a Rafael Batista. Even, you know, despite the big tools, Robles has it. I think Stevenson definitely has it, and I think there's examples throughout the system, the Nationals. In the past, I think, especially in the draft, they might have been willing to maybe take some cuts in terms of raw tools and upside to take players with more right now playability. I think Matt Schrock is a guy that was undervalued that has been a terrific example of that this year for them.
Use that segue right there and talk Schrock a little bit because, once again, I think he was the MVP of the All-Star game for the Sally League this week or last week, you know, very recently.
Last Tuesday, yeah.
13th round pick last year, signed for $400,000, so got, you know, pretty close to fourth round money. But, you know, I'm not sure where his defense is, but the guy can sure hit.
He can hit. And, you know, he is a guy that is going to, again, maybe those supplementary tools, the athleticism, the defense, the speed, they might not be, you know, they might not jump off the page. But this is, and he's listed at 5'8". But he doesn't really look it. He's built. He's a pretty physical, muscular build for that height. And there's a little bit more authority and pop in the bat when he turns on his pitch than you're expecting when you read, you know, 5'8", 175, second baseman. Not that this is going to be a 20 home run guy, but he's hit some home runs this year. He's hit a lot of doubles. He hit a double. He had a really nice swing, taking an outside fastball the other way for a double. In the Sally All-Star game, and I think it was off PJ Conlon, and he was a guy that I liked a lot in college. You know, again, like you mentioned, he did get paid against the bonus pool, meaning that his amateur bonus exceeded $100,000 after the 10th round last year, which I think indicates that he was valued more highly than your average 13th round pick. I don't know if you know. Do you know why he fell? Like, was it just like he wanted X money out of South Carolina in a certain round range? It didn't happen, and then teams called him, and he wasn't a lock enough to sign out of the round range he wanted. The teams wanted to take him to the top 10 rounds where it had to count against the bonus pool, so he fell and got paid. Or do you know why he fell?
Because
he got paid pretty well.
That's what I've heard. But that's really rumor and not something that I have a fact on. But that's the theory, and nobody wanted to go pay him, you know, draft him in the third or fourth round necessarily because of the, you know, the physical tools. I mean, and so, like you say, he slips, and the defensive profile's not quite clear. But
I think, like, you know, I'm not comparing him to Daniel Murphy, but I'm just using Daniel Murphy for Nationals fans as an example of, like, you know, if a guy can really hit, they're going to find a place for him to play. And again, I'm not comping Schrock to Murphy. I'm just saying Murphy is an offensive-minded second baseman. And you can find guys, if they're bringing value to the lineup offensively, you can teach guys to fall on the ball, so to speak, at second base. And I don't want to talk about Schrock like he's, you know, like Dan Uggla at second base. Like, he's not just trying to knock the ball down. Yeah, you know, no, it's not terrific infield actions. It's not super loose. The hands don't work fantastic on double play. He doesn't have a cannon for an arm, but I don't, you know, I'm sure I think you've probably seen him in Hagerstown, and certainly you'll see him in Potomac this year. I don't think that it's not horrible.
No, not at all. It's just, it's not as fluid as you would normally expect from a middle infielder, particularly at low A, or now high A, as the case may be.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's a little bit of a different, like, you know, we usually talk about a low minors middle infield prospect. We're talking about guys that are terrific athletes, great defenders, have a lot of supplementary tools and require projection. And I think that Schrock is just a different take on that, where you don't have to project much on him. The question is, you know, how much is the now going to impact the major league level? He's going to be a guy that would really, really, you know, if you were to be an everyday second baseman for a contending team, he'd really have to bring something special to the table in terms of the hit tool and ability to reach base. And, you know, the way he's been hitting, maybe that's what he is. I think it's probably a lower ceiling but higher floor guy. It's been really great for me to see him succeed to the degree that he has this year, because he did catch my eye for a couple of reasons, South Carolina last year. And I was a little I was elated when I saw Washington got him as late as they did, but I was confused that he lasted that long too. I recollect thinking that. But it's been great to actually see a guy that you liked a little bit at the amateur level saying, I know this guy doesn't have blow away tools, but I really believe in the field to hit that much. It's rewarding when you see one of those guys that maybe you had that type of rap on as an amateur go out and actually hit. I think, you know, now for Schrock, he's just going to have to prove it at every level. I mean, he's just
that's a great point.
And that's just the type of guy he is. And it's tough because, you know, he's never going to get the fanfare of a Robles. You know, he's never going to have the tools to really be a maybe, you know, top 100 prospect in the minors right now. But he definitely really is a guy I think the Nationals fans should keep their eye on. And if deep Nationals prospect followers remember, we've since traded him away, but Tony Renda was another kind of scrappy second base college guy that had a lot of success and was a high makeup, high playability guy that was in the national system a few years ago. No knock on Renda. I loved watching Renda play. He was a real gamer. But I think Schrock has that same gritty, kind of grinded out mentality, probably with a little bit more, to me, a little bit more strength in the body and the swings, but maybe a little bit more chance to hit.
Yes.
So, you know, but whether it's an everyday second baseman or whether it's a utility infielder, I think the Nationals have really shown a fondness for kind of hard-nosed, big conference college performers that I think that scouts might shy away from a little bit from other teams because, you know, they might not look, play, move, run, what have you, profile like the guys you see every night on TV. But I think Sheldon Noisy is another guy like that from the Nationals draft class this year. But the Nationals, I think Andrew Stevenson was a guy like that a little bit. The Nationals have shown a lot of belief in those guys, and for whatever reason, the national system has been historically a very good place for that type of college bat to develop.
Dane Dunning, the same. Nick Banks, another perfect example of that in the draft class just this year.
Yeah, I think Banks is Banks is a guy I'm excited about. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me keep you on. Let's shift to the prospect to the mound. But I want to stick Nats prospects before we dive into the draft real quick. I really want to get your take on Ronaldo Lopez, who I think you've seen a couple times this year, and Eric Fetty as well. Lopez is kind of, at least statistics-wise, is just broken out in the last, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 starts. Is leading the Eastern League now in strikeouts by a wide margin. Is he putting it together, or is this a case of just a really hot streak?
Well, I think you look at the numbers from this streak, from this last 4 or 5 weeks, and, you know, it's tough to say, given how well he has missed bats, which is no surprise to anyone that's seen him, just in terms of the raw stuff, and the way that he's limited walks, and the success that that has had ultimately on his run prevention. I don't know if you can say it's a hot streak. Even if it diminishes, even if his control is not what it's been in this streak, which I don't think it is, I think that you have to give him credit just from a, you know, a player progression standpoint. I think that he has clearly done something to address what I can almost guarantee, I don't know, but I can almost guarantee coaches in the national system have been preaching to him for a long time, which is just about repeating his delivery and filling the strike zone. Ronaldo Lopez, you know, shorter right-handed pitcher with just, you know, explosive stuff and arm speed that you can't teach. And he just, you know, he doesn't have to really work hard to get to swing and miss pitches. And I've seen, I mean, the fastball will get up to 97, 98. I've seen him touch 98 once in Harrisburg live this year against Reading. I've seen the curveball and the changeup plays coming in those pitches. So I think this latest hot streak, you know, you hope that even if he's not going to be striking out, I don't know what it is, roughly like 30 for every five that he walks forever, you really hope that something has been done. He's now at AAA, so we'll see. Something has been done that gives this guy that is not a traditional right-handed starter package a chance to keep that swing and miss stuff around the zone enough such that he can pitch every fifth day at the big league level and, you know, make it through a big league lineup two or three times.
All right, I'll put you on the spot. Is he a long-term starting pitcher, or is he pitching the bullpen?
If I had to go absolutely one way or another, 100% to 0%, I'd say reliever. But I think especially after this streak, you know, he's now 20, 21.
He's still very young, yeah. And he hasn't thrown that many innings on top of it, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think in general you want to go out there, try and develop this guy as a starter. You know, I think you always want to give any pitcher that has the chance to bring dynamic swing and miss stuff every fifth day, you want to give that guy a chance to bring that stuff every fifth day. But, you know, if he does run into an issue as a starter, I think the reason what's going to happen, and he should be the type of guy, like if there is any issue, like I said, it'll be he's falling behind in counts, so he can't really use the secondary stuff. And even though he throws really hard, advanced hitters, maybe big lead hitters, if he's in that situation where he's starting games and falling behind a lot, he throws 95, 6, 7, but I think major league hitters should probably time a bullet if they saw it enough and knew that it was coming. And, you know, if he's going to be the type of starter that goes, this is just my concern. If he is a reliever, it's because I think they gave him a chance to start and he just kept falling behind in counts and had to throw his fastball. And guys were turning around 95, 6, 7 in a way that really you don't see until you're at the major league level. And you see this a lot with hard-throwing pitching prospects. And, you know, I see a lot of high A, see some double A. Even, like, you get away with stuff at 96, even in double A. Even in triple A, you can get away with it. And then the lights come on, and, you know, you might not be facing, like, prospects anymore. You might be facing, you know, David Ortiz. You might be facing Giancarlo Stanton. You might be facing Carlos Gonzalez. I don't know. Like, there are guys at the major league level that you don't see anything like them in the minor leagues because there's only one Poppy. There's only one fill in the blank. And there's a lot of those guys with that type of power who aren't afraid of 97. It's just waiting for you in the big leagues. So, obviously, I don't want to hedge my bets against Lopez, you know, and I'd love to see him as a starter. I think another scenario with him, you know, obviously, Nationals fans wonder if at the deadline this contending team is going to need to do anything to shore up the bullpen. I think that's a understandable question, lingering as we look ahead to July. It's definitely crossed my mind, though, you know, depending on what's available in the bullpen market and, you know, what strings are pulled at the big league club, if Ronaldo Lopez could be the type of exciting young guy that comes up mid-season, if they want to. If he's really pitching as well as he has lately, and if they want to try and put him in a short stint role right now just to help the team this year and then let him develop again, I don't know what you think about that, but that's definitely been something that's crossed my mind. If there is a need after the deadline for a big arm in the pen, kind of wondering if he could be that guy that could fill that role.
I completely agree with you, and he reminds me a little bit of like a Christian Garcia that they tried to add to the playoff bullpen a couple years ago. Very similar idea.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Hopefully a lot better health.
Yes.
Let's talk Eric Fetty. What are your thoughts on Fetty?
For him, one of the guys that I enjoy chatting with when he's charting. I really like, he's a very professional approach to the baseball family. He grew up actually with the Harpers, so he's seen, you know, he's seen some, clearly, needless to say, he's seen some other guys that he's known for a long time have some success with this organization. He's got great stuff. It's a really live, above average sinker slider mix. You know, I saw the last time I've seen him live, he was facing Winston-Salem, and it was the best I'd seen his command. It's the best I'd seen his fastball. He was consistently getting, you know, heavy sink on the ball in the mid-90s. The slider, he always has had a good slider. That was one of his calling cards out of UNLV a few years ago.
It's nasty. It's really nasty. It goes like 45 feet, and then it just goes dead left. It's crazy.
It is crazy. There's a little bit less vertical depth to it than a lot of swing and miss sliders, but it has like such. I mean, I'm not going to call it like a cut like pitch, because it's not. It's a true slider, but it doesn't like get down as much as some sliders that miss bats. But it just has that much like lateral break, and it's that late. Like it moves. It moves from west to east, I guess you could say, a lot more than a lot of sliders. And it comes from the same slot as a fastball. And obviously, when you're a good fastball guy, you know, hitters have to stay more cognizant of that velocity. So it really plays well off of his sinker. But something that I really was enthused with when I've seen him more recently is the development of his third pitch. And he throws kind of a hard split-like changeup. I think that's coming a long ways, and I think that that's going to give him something pretty nasty to work against left-handed hitters with if he's able to bring that to the rotation. He had a little bit of a bumpy start, I think, early on this year, as you remember, in Potomac. That could be partially attributed to the fact that despite that he was a first-rounder from college in 2014, I think 2016 has been his first full professional season. Mm-hmm. The only real trepidation that I have with him, it really starts with health. This is a guy that has had, and this really isn't a knock on him, this should be a reality of what it means to be a hard thrower in this day and age. He's not the widest guy in the world. He's listed at 6'4", 180, and he's wiry. His arm works really fast. He's athletic, but he's not a workhorse, per se. It's not like a Lucas Giolito type of, you know, like that massive width where you're like, even if it's a bad arm action or a little effort delivery, like this guy's big enough, he might pitch through it. And he's had injury. I mean, he had Tommy John as a college junior. After that really great start that I mentioned against Winston-Salem, he hit the DL with an oblique injury. And, you know, there is, I wouldn't say there's as much effort or violence in Fetty's delivery as Ronaldo Lopez, but like, there's some effort. And there's some hook in the back. The arm is a little long in the back, and you kind of look at his delivery and you wonder, because when he's not going good, it really is just a command thing, and hitters will get better passes at his fastball than you really would expect for a guy that's throwing in the mid-90s, that type of thing. And I think it's a sequencing and command thing, and you kind of look at his delivery and you factor in the effort and how that's already had a negative impact on his durability. And then you kind of look at, you know, if you look at his delivery, is this the cleanest, smoothest, easiest, most repeatable delivery such that I really think that that command can get better? So I'm starting with my worries about Fetty, but ultimately I think, you know, if it clicks, the sum of the parts is a, you know, number three, maybe number four starter that gets swings and misses to keep the ball on the ground. I think that's what everybody's hoping for. But I think it's premature to talk about him moving to the bullpen. I'd really like to see him as a starter, and I'd like to see him as another young starter that can develop with Washington, kind of, you know, maybe along with Lucas Giolito, maybe along with Joe Ross. But, you know, we'll have to see how the durability, I think it starts with durability, and then if he proves durable enough that he's a real palatable big league starting option at some point next year, and then the question becomes, is he spotting the fastball enough to make it through lineups two or three times?
All right, let me cut the script a little bit, and I'm going to ask more of a general question, but just we've covered a lot of names, but any sleepers in the system that either you want to talk about or you don't think are getting enough love and prospect hype?
Well, yeah, we already touched on Schrock. I think, do you see Phillips Valdez at all
in
Potomac this year?
I have. The age concerns me a little bit, but the arm is good.
Well, yeah, the age concerns me too, but he's only worked as a starter. I'm waiting for him to be moved to the bullpen and see what happens.
I agree.
And that's, you know, I just want to bring him up as a sleeper. He's now at Harrisburg, where he wasn't a call up after the first half of the Carolina League. I believe he moved up a couple weeks sooner. He's made a couple starts at Harrisburg. I think he's 24. This is a guy, though, you know, I think Phillips Valdez, this is probably a guy that a lot of people probably don't know in the national system. Definitely high risk. There's a lot of variance with this type of profile in terms of where it ends up helping a big league team, or if it winds up helping a big league team. But he's a lean frame guy, and I've seen 2+ pitches. It is. He's very thin. It's effort in the delivery. It's the reliever all the way for me. But a very quick arm, his fastball. As a starter,
I've seen at 96, 97 with life. And, you know, there are a lot of variables in this delivery that can add and subtract from the consistency of the action on the slider. But when he's extended, when the delivery's right, I mean, he'll get guys to chase and swing over top of that mid-80 slider off a good fastball, too. So it's a reliever all the way for me, and I think it's, you know, not to the same level as Ronaldo Lopez, Eric Fetty, Lucas Giolito, Victor Robles. It's not a top guy in the system. But Phillips Valdez is one of those hard-throwing stuff guys that I think the day may soon be coming where he transitions to a bullpen role. And if something really clicks better for him in terms of his successor, I wouldn't be surprised, just the raw stuff.
Yeah, that's a good name, and I haven't thought of that. That's a really good name. Good call. Next question I want to ask, and this may also get us kind of some names that we haven't touched on as well, but if it, you know, it goes back, that's fine. Let's have you put your general manager hat on for a quick second. The Nationals are looking to improve their team in the next month. I think bullpen help is pretty obvious a need, and, you know, maybe another bat, maybe not. But who are a couple of prospects that you might be more eager to trade than maybe some others?
Yeah, that's a great question. When it comes to my own GM hat, I don't know. I'm not sure it's nice enough yet. I'm not sure if I'm wearing, like, a fitted GM hat. I think it's more of, like, a snapback at this point.
I see you more in a fedora, personally. Just saying. I see you more fedora styling. A little slick back and rocking a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the fedora is more of a dicey play in my generation.
Yeah, it definitely is more my age. It definitely. There is that age gap there for sure.
Yeah. No,
I can pull that off better than you can. Yeah, that's a little, at least age-wise,
Regardless of age, I'm not sure if I'm ever going to be able to pull off a fedora. I think to the friend from that TV show, The League, Andre, that wears the fedora. But anyway, my GM hat, regardless of what type of hat it may be, some prospects that I think, you know, I think when you ask that question, which guys are you trying to maybe sell high on, I think it implies basically which prospects are having a good year such that teams that don't see them as much as you do internally from outside the system might value that player a little bit more than you do internally.
That's exactly what I'm asking.
I'm presuming, yeah, I'm just using that as the operative assumption to answer that question in my fedora. I think that I would probably, honestly, you named him earlier, I'd start with Drew Ward. I don't know if Drew Ward is a headline first prospect piece that gets you an impactful guy at the deadline. He either maybe could be the type of guy that I think could be the first prospect to net the Nationals kind of a solid, not top flight, but solid pen arm to lengthen the bullpen, or he could just be part of like a second or third piece of a larger deal. I think someone else that could kind of fall into that discussion. I'm trying to think about guys kind of on the periphery here. I'm going to name Stevenson. I don't want to go against Stevenson, but I'm hoping he hits enough to be a regular. But you know, I think you have to factor in, especially when it comes to the Nationals long term. Even if Drew Ward is a third baseman, there's not a lot of room for him there long term with Rendon there. And I think he's a first baseman, and there's certainly not room for him there at first base for the Nationals. I think Stevenson too. Nice player. Maybe roll 50, best case ceiling, maybe a 45 or a 40, kind of either a second division everyday guy or a bench fourth outfielder, pinch runner. But I don't know exactly, you know, you have a crowded Nationals outfield pitcher moving forward too. Clearly you have Bryce out there worth, that's a lot of money for a few more years. I know even though Revere, I believe the one-for-one, Revere for Storen, they were both the last year of their contracts. We just talked about a guy, Victor Robles, that might be a guy that they're hoping internally eventually when he's ready to fill that center fielder of the future role, not to mention Michael Taylor. So I'm going to go with Drew Ward and Andrew Stevens, two guys that my scout gut had maybe given me some hesitation on in terms of whether they were everyday big leaguers, but they've both certainly performed. And, you know, they both certainly have some raw ingredients of everyday big league guys. But I'd probably start with those two. And then I'm not including Trey Turner, Giolito, Robles, Ronaldo Lopez. I'm kind of tiering those four guys when it comes to a trade.
as we really like those guys, and otherwise, if we weren't trading them, they would be factoring into our equation more long term. But I think if those guys do get traded, it would be, and I clearly don't think Giolito is going anywhere. I don't think Robles really is going anywhere. It would be interesting for me to see if they could, especially coming off this 4 or 5 hot weeks, if, you know, some package of, like, a Drew Ward, Andrew Stevenson, or Ronaldo Lopez, like, and then maybe, you know, there are always guys the pro scouts like, that, you know, I just named Phillip Valdez. There's always a guy or two that some organizations might have turned in a little bit higher that we haven't touched on. If any package of those guys, maybe headlined by Ronaldo Lopez, could really net you some impact, and right now trade value at the big league level.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good call. Kind of for the sake of brevity, give me your, I don't know, 2-minute thoughts on the Nats 2016 draft class. We got Carter Kieboom, Dane Dunning. You mentioned, is it Noyce? Nice? The third
Noisy.
Base? Noisy.
Noisy. It really should be. I don't know if it's like, I just, Noisy. It looks like Noose.
And I can't, and that just, yeah, that can't be right. So, yeah. No. And then Luzardo and then Banks. Kind of, like I said, just give me your quick take on the draft picks and kind of what you liked, what you didn't, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, I'll start by saying this is hands down my favorite, my personal favorite Nats draft. I don't know, really, that they've had in a while. I don't really know if that means anything or is worth anything, but this is the most enthused that I've been about, you know, walking away from day 2 of the draft. So it's not including day 3, but after Friday, June 10th, this was as good as I felt about a Nationals first 2 days of the draft in a long time. Carter Kieboom, if we're just hitting on things quickly, I think that they had a nice blend of kind of some safety and floor with, I think, even though you can make the argument that Nick Banks is not being considered a high floor guy across the industry now, so he had a down spring, I think the overall tools kind of give him that, although it might be kind of a tweener fourth outfielder, doesn't hit for enough power on a corner, not quite a center fielder, but can hit a little bit. Maybe that's what the ceiling is, but it's still a pretty high floor. I think that's what his raw tools are, kind of when you add up some of the parts. I think Dunning, same thing. Might not have gotten as much love nationally, but that's because Florida's pitching staff was so deep. And I think this is a guy that can contribute, hopefully, in a starting role, but certainly proved this year for Florida that he can have dynamic two-pitch mixes in a relief role. And then by the same token, I think you take Kieboom and Luzardo, who certainly, you know, are going to be referred to as guys with some, quote, risk because they're high school guys. And certainly because Lizardo's coming back from an injury. But even those two guys, I think, we talked about the playability that Nationals, you know, personnel seems to value and the players they bring into the system. And both Carter Kieboom and Jesus Luzardo, you know, in Lizardo's case, he's a pitcher. He threw a ton of strikes. Kieboom has a very pure, loose, easy, high-contact swing. I think that there are a lot of people that really believe that guy's going to hit. And some power is going to come on top as he fills out his profile, too. I thought it was a really great mix of guys. And like I said, I think that I walked away feeling a lot better personally, just in my own evaluations of these guys. Some of these guys I cover for the draft for Baseball Perspective, that they kind of came away with a glut of talent, maybe more so than in previous years, where because of some of the major league decisions, they weren't picking in the first round. This year they had 2 first-round picks, and I really liked what they did.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. I think they did a great job, particularly considering they were drafting, 28 and 29 in the first round to get those two types 20, of players.
Yeah, 28th and 29th, I believe, yeah.
I mean, there's definitely some high floors with both of those guys considering what type of prospects they are, and there's also some ceiling with both of them, which, you know, to me is the perfect kind of player to take at the end of the first round. So.
Yeah, no, totally. And obviously, too, I think that every year teams will take pitchers, Cal Quantrill being the guy from this year we're going to remember the most. Eric Fetty was a guy like this for the Nationals. Teams, there's always going to be a Tommy John guy that gets popped somewhere, and teams are hoping that, you know, he gets back to form and they got a deal and they try and, like, undercut him a little bit with the bonus because there's a little less upfront value because he's currently hurt. Washington's had such a good track record getting guys back from amateur Tommy John surgeries that you know, maybe I shouldn't, but I'm always inclined to feel a little bit more confident when they take that type of guy. And Lizardo is their guy like that this year.
Yeah, and Williamson, the 15th rounder, if they get him signed, he could be he could be a very similar idea as well. I think that was a shrewd pick if they can get him signed.
Yeah, no, I was gonna. If we touched on draft sleepers at all, I know we've been I've been going on and on here. I appreciate if there's anyone when we actually release this podcast still listening to me. I appreciate you bearing with me, but I was gonna mention both Ryan Williamson and Trace Barrera as sleepers from this draft a little bit, from the college ranked guys a little bit farther down that fans might not know that I do think, you know, might not be set the world on fire type of big league guys, but certainly you're going to find ways to add value to this minor league system.
Yeah, if you like Spencer Keboom, you should really like Trace Barrera. Very similar players.
Yes, and it is, for those listening, not to be confused, there are now two Kabooms in the national system. There's Spencer, who is Carter Kaboom's older brother. If Nationals fans ever see the last name Kaboom next to the position of catcher in a box score, they should not be worried that, you know, 6'2", 180-pound shortstop Carter Kaboom has been transferred to catcher. But, yeah, so I do like Trace Barrera, you know, kind of with where I was at. Last season, saw a lot of him play at the University of Texas. Just, you know, geographically speaking, got to see him a couple of times. You know, I think it's the best case ceiling is still a big league backup catcher. But I've noticed when I saw him take BP, it's like close to average raw power, might be average raw power, like 45, 50 grade raw power from a catcher. Probably same grade range arm, like plays close to average with some accuracy and carry. I think you can stay behind the plate, even though he shuffled between there and first base, Texas, I believe. But I think he can stay behind the plate. And, you know, I definitely liked when I saw him. Again, we keep talking about guys in the national system with makeup and playability. A very vocal leader of the defense every time I've seen him play catcher. And certainly really takes command of the pitching staff, or at least the Texas. He did a really good job. I felt like he was always controlling the game. Really was the leader of the defense and was working very directly with the pitcher. And I think those are more subtle aspects, especially when looking at a catcher's profile, I really like. So I like Barrera for sure, like you said.
Yeah, he was a nice get in round six. I liked that pick, yeah. So.
Yeah, and I don't know what he signed for, but I imagine they might have undercut him a little bit because obviously...
Not huge, but they got him, I think, for, you know, 10% under slot, 15%. I mean, they got a haircut, but it wasn't crazy.
Yeah, just they're gonna need to move some. Did Lizardo sign for 1-1 or 1-3?
1-4.
1-4, okay.
That's why they're gonna have to do some real math and some other things, signing some guys.
Yeah, but well, first of all, I think once you take Lizardo, I can almost guarantee that they had planned in advance what was gonna happen once they got Lizardo. So I think they were probably like, it's been interesting, again, not to tail off on my own experiences, but from seeing the way that sometimes some of these boards come together, it's really interesting how in a hypothetical situation, one player drafted can then guarantee three other guys drafted into this organization because you know that you might need to try and move some money around and you know that you kind of like those guys' talents in round 6 through 10, but you're also going to be able to undercut their bonus a little bit to try and move the surplus to the guy that you took over slots. So, you know, I think they'll find a way to get it all done at the end of the day. You know, yeah, I think Lizardo, you know, for anybody wondering why he got 1-4, this is we talked about him throwing strikes. This is not a just touch and feel lefty. I mean, he was one of the most polished guys on the showcase circuit to me last year, threw a ton of strikes. Low 90s fastball. All reports were from the agency and from area scouts that velocity was actually getting into the 94, 5, maybe even 96 range as early as this spring. And you know, then he got hurt with Tommy John. But I think that $1.4 million, even after the Tommy John, should be reflective or indicative to Nationals fans of the way that this guy, Jesus Lizardo, was valued before the injury.
And they certainly got a chance to, I'm guessing, look at those medicals if they're taking him in round 3, first pick in the day 2. And it's been 3 or 4 months since he had the surgery. I'm sure they felt pretty confident where he was.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I mean, I'm sure they saw the medicals. And again, I could be totally wrong, but I know I think he's a Beverly Hills client. And I think that all in all, I think the track record is you know, I think they made the medicals probably available, and I guarantee the Nationals have so much experience working with these Tommy John amateurs that they probably have a protocol in place for being comfortable with where the medicals were at before making that selection.
Well, Adam, I could go a whole nother hour talking. I mean, there's so many names that I'm just coming off the top of my head we didn't even touch on. AJ Cole, Austin Voth, Jackson Reitz, all the catchers. I mean, dozens of names, but we're going to have you on sometime later this summer and cover the rest of the guys. But right now, I got to give you a spot for your plugs where people can find you on Twitter, where they can find you at BP, basically anything you want to plug.
Well, I'm glad that you explained to me what the plugs meant, because I was looking at that on the little framework we discussed, and it said Adam's plugs, and I was like, Adam's plugs, like what? What's that mean? So now I know. So I'll plug away for the masses here, I suppose. My name's Adam McInturf, senior prospect writer at Baseball Prospectus. I see games, I should say, in the Eastern League, Carolina League, South Atlantic League, and the short season that I'm going to do is the Appalachian League. It's going to be a lot of fun. Baseball Prospectus, I think we have a really tremendous group. I really enjoy working with all the guys on the minor league team, and we're led by Craig Goldstein and Brett Sayer, who really keep everything together. I'd say if I'm plugging anything, I'll plug the group more than I'll plug myself. We have a lot of really, really great coverage of individual minor league all-star games on our website right now, premium content for subscribers, and I'm really looking forward to getting our mid-season top 50 prospects out. I don't know if every major publication is really doing one of those, and certainly I think that we'd all say pro scouting is kind of the bread and butter more than the draft side for BP's prospect team, and I think that that's something that, like I said, would be pretty accepted across the board by the group. I think it our mid-season top 50 is going to reflect a lot of hard work by you know, our people all across the country that are seeing games, and then certainly a lot of tough decisions to be made by Craig Goldstein and Brett Sayer and the rest of our senior group specifically. So I'm really looking forward to being able to release that mid-season top 50. And I think it reflects a lot of great work by everybody. You can find me on Twitter at @WAdam_McInturf, or just type in Adam McInturf. That's McInturff. And you know, I love scouting. I love talking prospects, and I really appreciate being on the show. Thank you very much.
Well, Adam, thank you so much. There's nothing I like better than talking prospects, particularly Nats prospects, and this was a really fun hour. I hope the audience enjoyed it as much as certainly I did. So thank you very much. We'll have to have you on later on sometime this summer, and hopefully cover the rest, some other guys, maybe after the trade deadline if something happens, and whatever else. But thank you very much for coming on, and I look forward to seeing you at the park, hopefully in the next week or two.
Yeah, no, my pleasure, Ryan. I'm happy to be on here, happy to talk, and I'll see you at a national affiliate very soon.
And that was episode 72 of the Nats GM Show with Baseball Prospectus' Adam McInturf. What a great evaluator and resource, and wonderful guy as well. So thank you to him for coming on. I definitely will have to have him on again later this summer to cover some other guys. So one thing, if I might, before we get out of here, quick shout out to our sponsor, No Halftime, and the No Halftime app. I know they're a sponsor, but even on top of that, it is a really neat app that I've actually gotten into in the last few weeks, and downloaded it on my phone, and I've been toying around with it. It's pretty fun. So check it out. Use the promo code NATSGM, and I think you get a free t-shirt and some other things. So definitely check it out for me. That would be really cool if you did. So that's episode 72. It is a wrap. Bye for now.